Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and earlier this week, Mayor de Blasio appointed his legal counsel and charged her with the task of expanding high-speed internet access to more people and places across the city. Also this week, an unrelated development, but Google announced plans to explore bringing its high-speed Google Fiber network to 34 more cities in 9 metro areas across the country, though not yet ours. This will compete with the overly high price of monopoly internet service that the cable companies often enjoy right now. Well, my next guest will help us understand the possibilities of Google Fiber ever making it to our area and what the mayor's options are for increasing broadband access and affordable broadband access. Andrew O'Shea is the founder of Personal Democracy Media. Now 10 years old, maybe you know their event, the Personal Democracy Forum, or some of the other things they do. And back in 2005, as I mentioned before, he ran for New York City Public Advocate on the platform of free citywide Wi-Fi. Hi, Andrew. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to see you, Brian.
So earlier this week, Mayor de Blasio appointed Maya Wiley as his counsel. She's a civil rights lawyer who advocates for the poor and underserved, as so many people in the de Blasio administration have done. And one of the ways she and the mayor are hoping to serve the poor is to increase access to broadband internet across the city. So let's take a listen to her from their announcement.
So many people in this city, even if they are lucky enough, and many aren't, but even if they are lucky enough to have access in their neighborhoods, they can't actually afford to pay for it. Because if you can't afford to feed your family by the end of the month, you can't afford $75 a month for the broadband service. And that's what we have to fix.
So this sounds like your old platform. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. I'm sorry it's taken so long for people to understand this issue. But it's very clear that, and it's an old adage, that information is power and information is a currency. And for a mayor who's basically talking about economic equality, the fact that he's linking broadband as an economic justice issue and actually bringing out his legal counsel as the person who's going to fight for this issue is a very important, significant step.
And legal counsel, it's not the first job that I would have thought of, that would be in charge of implementing this. Do you understand why?
Well, sure. I mean, economic justice issues tend to be battled in the courts and legislatively. And in New York, we have a complicated situation where we have two broadband providers. There's a duopoly in the city. It's Time Warner, soon or maybe not so soon, Comcast.
And trying to acquire Time Warner.
Right, which is actually an interesting leverage point potentially for the city. And Verizon, which both have franchise agreements, which basically allow them to operate their broadband services and selling high-speed broadband to the areas of New York where they think there's customers, although their agreements are intended to have them serve everybody.
And currently, people without internet access in their homes or without quality internet access in their homes are largely who you might expect, older, poorer, disproportionately people of color. And we probably don't even need to go over the implications of this because they're so obvious. They're for unequal education, unequal public safety for an older person, unequal access to staying in touch with your family if you're an older person and isolated. Anything you would add?
Well, health care, applying for food stamps, applying to get into college. You know, libraries now, all their 30-minute slots for access to the internet through libraries are filled up. The library system is thinking about ways in which it can actually expand access beyond the walls of the library. But, just think about it in terms of education. I was talking to Arne Duncan a couple of weeks ago, and I asked Arne Duncan
U.S. Education Secretary.
I asked him as a percentage of time, how many hours of a year are schools actually open? And he actually didn't know. We kind of agreed on a calculation of 15%. And then I asked him, how many hours do you think kids are actually in class? And he said about 10% of all the time of their lives. You know, if you add up the holidays and the weekends and so on. But then I said, well, if you put computer labs and you're wiring schools with E-rate for kids to get access online at schools, how much time do you think they're in front of a computer? And we agreed on 1%. So then I asked him, how productive would you be if you only had access to the internet 1% of all your life? And he was in shock at the statistics. So I said, then why aren't you not in President Obama's office slamming your fist on his desk, demanding that he break up the cartel of the telco and cable duopolies that are actually screwing over your kids?
And this is where Google Fiber also comes in. It's fast, relatively affordable compared to the major telecommunications companies. What are they actually doing?
Well, so Google obviously – so we should, for the audience, be clear. Wireless is not broadband. Broadband is fiber or in cable, it's coaxial cable, which isn't as fast as fiber. And Google has been experimenting in Kansas City and other places, Austin and in Utah, to deliver – broadband fiber through its own network to as many people as they can in those cities, because they're trying to demonstrate and pilot the power of this technology to transform the economies of those cities, transform education. And they're picking places where they have a political system that wants it. They're picking places where there's engineering talent, there's startup talent, and they're picking places where they can actually see to move the ball. The reason why they're not in New York doing it, even though Google has headquarters here, is that New York is a complicated old city with a lot of old infrastructure. It's not that easy to lay fiber in the streets of New York and to deliver it in an equitable way. And it's also a very big city. So what Google is trying to do is demonstrate the power of this and hopefully get more and more public officials to understand the economic justice issue associated with access to information.
And Google isn't doing this as a mechanism to make money of their own and just compete with the cable companies?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Google has to also look at the bottom line of what this costs. It doesn't, you know, the technologies continue to evolve. You spend a huge amount of money doing infrastructure, and then there's a new technology that delivers it faster or wirelessly. You may have wasted your money. So the fact that Google is in a for-profit business doesn't necessarily make them bad. We need more competition in this country. The problem, and it's been pointed out by Susan Crawford, who you've interviewed in the past in her book Captive Audience, is that the telcos and the cable companies, using the power of money and politics, have basically turned Congress into their their actors in making sure that the duopoly stays the way it is.
In fact, the New York Times media columnist David Carr was on the show earlier this week talking about the Comcast-Time Warner Cable merger, and he said of broadband access, quote, "It's almost like it's a public good in private hands," unquote. So should broadband access be in the hands of public utility companies?
Well, I think that the notion is that just like water and just like electricity, there are quasi-public and private companies that deliver these services. And the question for regulators and the question for elected officials and the questions for the public really is, what's the reasonable cost? I actually didn't run on a platform of free wireless. I wanted it to be low-cost wireless because
okay.
There is a cost associated with this and it shouldn't be provided for free. We don't have free water. We don't have free electricity. But what is it reasonable? And Maya is right in her statement with the mayor the other day, which is $75 is beyond the reach of most working-class families to be able to access the Internet. And if you're hoping that your kid can get into CUNY, not just, you know, Harvard, they need to be able to have access to the Internet.
And so how do you see the mayor being able to implement this vision? I don't think they've laid out many specifics yet.
Well, one is to look at the franchise agreements themselves. Verizon promised fiber to every single resident in New Jersey by 2014. They got a rate increase to do that. They're going to claim that the city's infrastructure, getting permits, et cetera, is preventing them from being able to deliver it. They're also going to claim that there isn't a market for their services in certain areas so that they should focus on areas where there is a market. So the mayor's going to take a look at the franchise agreement, and it's really smart that his lawyer is going to be the person who's going to be looking at those agreements. But there's a lot of other things that the mayor can do. The mayor has huge amount of power with the infrastructure of New York, the sewer system, the light poles, the other kinds of infrastructure that the city owns, buildings that the city owns, to figure out ways to distribute broadband to more and more people. And particularly with the Time Warner Comcast merger talks, there may be an opportunity to negotiate the people doing that merger to have them promise lower cost delivery of broadband to poorer neighborhoods in New York.
So you might, despite your skepticism about two huge cable companies merging and the monopoly, duopoly, call it what you want, that might exist if they're allowed to do that, despite your skepticism about that, you might come around to supporting it if it comes with these public service, social justice kind of provisions?
Absolutely. I don't believe that it's possible to do broadband properly in New York in the near term, 10, 15, 20 years, without the incumbents at the table. They have to be part of the equation. So the question is what is the right mechanism? But, you know, Comcast had to deal with FCC to offer broadband for $10 a month to poor people as part of a provision of their buying Universal NBC. And the reality of it is that they put credit requirements on people so high that so few people were able to actually pass the credit to get the service that few people were able to access it. We should stop that kind of behavior.
We have a couple of minutes left before you go. Have any thoughts on Facebook buying the messaging app WhatsApp?
Well, you know, texting is an amazing platform that people are using, particularly young people. And the New York Times, I think, had it right, which is that the battle for users is actually more important right now than the battle for profits. But we're seeing an entirely new chapter, aggressive new chapter in the battle for the information age, power in the information age, where large companies with huge war chests are going to start buying up services in order to create some sort of recipe that guarantees success in the future.
One thing about WhatsApp is that currently its messages are deleted from the company's servers after they're delivered, if I understand this correctly. And that's not the case at all with Facebook, where that stuff lives on. Has there been any indication that that would change at WhatsApp and how that might affect the user experience or some of the privacy issues that always come
up? Well, I think there's a lot of issues here. I'm curious how the NSA is thinking about this.
And that's a Snapchat thing too, right, that your photos get deleted automatically after a short period of time, instead of hanging around until the college admissions boards look at what you have
One of the reasons why you'll see politicians continue to use BlackBerries is because of BlackBerry instant messaging, which is also disappears and not easily can't be FOIA'd or subpoenaed in court. So they don't use email. They use BlackBerry messaging so they can talk amongst their staff and close toll accesses to bridges, for example, without being followed. So
I think only Bridget Ann Kelly was a little more technically savvy.
A little more technically savvy. But the question here is that you're asking, I think it's too early to tell. I think WhatsApp made a decision, a business decision, which was that we got a great price for a product that we built just a short time ago. We'll be involved in trying to figure out how to make it better and figure out how to integrate the data collection side of Facebook with the nuanced disappearing quality of WhatsApp.
We leave it there for today with our frequent guest, Andrew Roche, the founder of Personal Democracy Media. Thanks, as always.
Thank you for having me.
And up next, pothole filling. Vision Zero. Can we get to zero traffic deaths in New York City and more with the brand new New York City Transportation Commissioner, Polly Trottenberg? Stay with us.